Hi, hello. We have a jam-packed episode of The Dunker Spot coming your way. The last episode of The Dunker Spot of 2025. But we check in on the Los Angeles Clippers. They're surging. The Brooklyn Nets are defending their tails off. The Miami Heat are getting all of the buckets right now. We got some questions about the Spurs and the Thunder. Still very good, but can they be poked at in certain ways? What on earth is happening with Atlanta Hawks defense? What's going to happen with Trae Young? Then we get into some all-star thoughts. Some pleasant surprises in terms of voting totals. Some glaring omissions in terms of the voting totals. We're going to talk about Scottie Barnes because someone has to, apparently, based on these results. But we are going to talk about all that and more. We hope you enjoy. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, last Dunker Spot of 2025. How are we feeling?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for embracing your bounce. Nikias, this is a fun time in basketball. I'm ready to talk about it, man. Let's talk about some hoop.
Let's talk some hoops indeed. Fun stretch of games that we're coming off of. Like, we're not going to break down the Christmas Day slate. That's too far ahead. But fun games there. So fun games over the weekend. And it feels like as we've passed the official trade deadline opening past December 15th, the unofficial start of the NBA season on Christmas, it feels like we have a bit of a feel for what these teams are at this point. I think we have a better understanding of who these teams are. And it's kind of counter time. It's kind of jockeying time. The standings on both sides of the coin, very jumbled up right now. Have you seen the East 3-7, 3-8? Have you seen the West as a concept? Like, it's just kind of wild.
Absolutely. That's the fun part of this season. You know, everyone likes to talk about how the NBA season starts at Christmas, but that disrespects the initial portion of the season, the NBA Cup portion of the season, where everything's real competitive. We've switched into this where it's competitive basketball every single night. And this is where your identity gets tested as a team. You know, you mentioned it. Teams know exactly who you are. They know what you're good at. They know what you struggle with. They're going to make you work to get back to who you are. And the struggle that teams are having doesn't mean you can't get back to what makes you good. You just have to understand what got you to where you are in the first place. And I think it becomes really interesting when you talk about the standings, especially if you look at the East. Detroit has been one of the more consistent teams we've seen. They have lost two straight games to the Jazz and the Clippers. Like, we've seen Boston, been surprised by their run. They lost to Portland. You know, Toronto and Orlando. Orlando has a tremendous win over Denver with Jokic, and they lose to Toronto. Toronto beats the Warriors, and they beat the Magic. It's real up and down right now, but that makes it fun. And I think that's where you should take a look and understand what these teams are and understand how they're navigating and responding to these stretches. Think about how people felt about the Houston Rockets maybe 5 or 6 days ago, and then Christmas happens, and then they've just been demolishing teams.
Yeah.
It gets KD's interesting. Very rude.
No, I like that. I guess the question I'll toss to you, Steve, I have some specific teams I want to get into shortly, but I guess when you get to this type of year, like, how are you balancing, okay, this team has found the counter to what teams are doing versus, okay, this didn't work, let's bookmark this, let's wait a little bit later. Like, how do you determine from this point on, like, what is a reasonable sample to figure out if teams have answers or not?
Well, I mean, I think it depends because different matchups are going to expose different flaws. And I think it's more, is this a pattern that we're seeing? Is this a team that's unable to do this? Like, can they not generate the type of shots they want to? Are they stuck in the mud against switches? Are they struggling to defend a certain type of player? I think once you get to that and you see that over and over and over again, it's like, okay, that needs to be fixed. That's a fatal flaw, or they need to protect that and they need to work on that. If it's something where, okay, we're facing this team that drives a lot, we're struggling during this, or we're a team that can do multiple things defensively, but we're struggling with switching, or we're struggling with trapping, and we're not necessarily in rhythm there, that becomes a fixable issue, if that makes sense. Like, let's think about the Knicks stretch right now, right? They've won 3 straight games by a total of 9 points. Offense is humming. Defense is this, we can't guard, or we're having a tough time right now. But I also think in today's NBA, this is a question I'll ask you, how many teams do you feel like can't score the basketball these days? How many of them are out there where you're like, I don't believe this team can score?
Mm. like I loosely say like a handful, but even then, like that's within the broader context of we have how many teams at like a 115 or better offensive rating, which would have been like top 10 5 or 6 years ago. And so like, I think to your general point, and this is something that you said on the pod before, like even the bad teams know how to get you in rotation and know what to do once you're in rotation and that kind of thing. And so like, there are certainly offenses that are worse than others. Like we've spent a good bit of time talking about the Dallas Mavericks. Hey, this defense is a little bit better than we thought. This offense, ooh boy, we're doing point Cooper. Wait a minute, what is this guard play? And then we have positive stretches, but then you kind of zoom out and it's like, oh, they're still within like that 27 to 30 range. But like, I don't watch the Mavs saying like, they just don't have anyone that can create stuff. Cooper Flagg's averaging 25 over his last like 10 or so. And so you still have elements of penetration, pick and roll play. Klay Thompson can still move off the ball. So like, there really aren't that many. And even the teams that fall in that bucket still have things that I can look at and say, well, they can do this.
Yeah, I mean, you take a look at the bottom of the standings, like you probably look at the New Orleans Pelicans and wonder, okay, we can get them. On the right night, you know, these teams about the same. It's more about can they sustain these things on both ends of the floor rather than can they do it. So you catch Derek Queen handoffs, Fears, Jordan Poole, Zion getting downhill on the wrong night, you're in a fight. You catch Sadiq. Sadiq Bey has been incredible, by the way. You catch the Kings on the wrong night, you're having a rough time. Mm-hmm. You know, you catch the Wizards and now CJ McCollum and Chris Middleton get buckets on top of Alex Starr doing things. It gets interesting. And that's why I am excited about the teams that you chose to talk about here today, because I think it reflects on what this period kind of symbolizes and means. And it gets tough because you're riding the wave of each win and loss because the standings are so compact. Like, take a look at the teams like the Wolves and the Sixers, right? At least twice over the last 4 days, they have somehow been either the 4 or 5 seed and then lost and fell to 6. And it's like, well, that's unfortunate. Mm-hmm. So, like, you ride the wave, but also understand, is this my team not executing consistently, or is this just we got on a certain night? Mm-hmm.
Which quickly, shout out Trey Johnson, shout out Bub Carrington, shaking off a cold start in Washington as well. But yeah, it's been some fun outings as of late. And as we flow into roaming the baseline and talk about some teams that have impressed us, that we've enjoyed, I'd like to start the bidding, Steve, with a team that has made me very sad for the majority of the year. But they're starting to perk up. They've won 4 straight games at this point. The Los Angeles Clippers, Steve, they're doing it on both ends of the floor. As mentioned, they've won 4 straight at this point. 15-point win over the Lakers, though they didn't have Austin Reeves. 20-point win over the Houston Rockets, where Kawhi Leonard drops 41. And Houston just did not have a fun time trying to figure out who we want to guard him, how much help do we want to send. It was just a whole bit. 119-103 over the Blazers. Still missing folks. Was not expecting a 3-point battle between Brook Lopez and Donovan Klingon to break out. But, you know, these things just happen when you're watching NBA basketball. And then most recently, you get the 13-point win over the Detroit Pistons. Top of the East. Only a game lead over the New York Knicks right now, I think, as we record this. So you've been saying they're starting to feel the knock. It's really getting close at the top of the Eastern Conference. But 13-point win over the Detroit Pistons. Kawhi Leonard drops 55 in that game. So you zoom out. During this win streak, per Clean in the Glass, a 127.6 offensive rating for the Los Angeles Clippers during this win streak. That is first in the league. More importantly to their formula, though, Steve, in my opinion, a 109.6 defensive rating during this win streak, which is third during this span of games, stranded from December 20th. But that was something that we both kind of identified early in the year when we had our what is happening with this Clippers segment. It's like this talent is still here. Like, Kawhi is working his way back at this point. James Harden has been very good. Ivica Zubac's having a good year, just hasn't felt as impactful, et cetera. But this transition defense was bad. We're having some uncharacteristic miscues in the half court. They're getting dinged and dropped. Some of these switches are getting hit. What is this? And so the fact that during this run, you have felt better about the defense that's allowing them to flow into early offense more. And this is already a team that doesn't want to play 150 miles per hour. So any kind of pushing towards getting the ball across earlier, flowing into early drag screens and early hit aheads, early transition seals for Kawhi, the bigs running the floor. Like, anytime you can get that stuff, it just helps grease the wheels for their overall output. And then you get to the half court offense, and we can pause on Kawhi Leonard for a moment. Oh my goodness, what is this man on right now, Steve? Your recent Western Conference Player of the Week, but during this win streak, 39 points per game, 56% on twos, and you know those are going to be tough. The pull-up middies, the turnaround shots, the post-ups, some of the drives to get to like 6 feet, and he's sprinkling these push shots. 44% on threes on nearly 9 attempts a game. 98% from the line, 11.5 free throw attempts per game for Kawhi Leonard during this stretch. And then you flip to the defensive end. Again, it's more than blocks and steals, but it is worth noting. 2.8 steals, 1.5 blocks. It's kind of peak Kawhi level. I am destroying everything. So you're getting all the bucket getting, and beyond that, and now I'll pass the rock to you because I feel like I'm yapping. But like the way that he's being moved around on both ends of the floor is what excites me the most about this stretch. Offensively, it's not just a steady dose of Kawhi isolation clear aside. He can do that. But here's some off-ball screens to get him the ball on the move. Here's a down screen to lift them up the floor to flow into a pick and roll with Brooke Lopez or John Collins when he's healthier, or Chris Dunn if we want to mismatch Hunt. And then I can attack from there. The Clippers are doing a good job of spacing around it, all those Kawhi actions. So you don't know where he's getting the ball. And when he gets it, all you know is that he's going to score in some capacity. And defensively, you can look at the Houston game and see the possessions where he's got Kevin Durant. It's like, oh yeah, that's still in there. But we're going to put you on Tari Eason. We're going to put you on Amen Thompson. We want you to roam. We get to this Detroit game. You can guard Cade, especially if we're going to, you know, execute any kind of switching. But let's put you on Asar Thompson. We really want to activate you off the ball, especially since we have Chris Dunn still in the starting lineup. He can guard pretty much anyone you want him to. And so the fact that you are getting engaged Kawhi Leonard, and you're also getting engaged Kawhi Leonard off the ball in particular, he's doing such a good job of just closing down gaps, disrupting drives. You try to pass the ball near him, you're just not going to have any sort of fun. And so I'm just having a blast watching this dude destroy everything right now. That's where it kind of starts for me with this Clippers team.
No, Kawhi's been incredible during the stretch. And I think that's a big part of what makes the Clippers who they are. When Kawhi can do that in the half court consistently, they have a stronger base on top of what James Harden has done all season long. But I think going back to your earlier point, because we talked about the Clippers earlier this month, and the big question was, okay, what is your identity? What is the one thing you do every single night? What can we count on every single night? And we didn't have the answers. They weren't hitting their winning formula. The defense was not the level that could be sustainable. They were 24th in defensive rating when we talked about them then. In the month of December, they've been 13th. So, okay, the defense has raised back up. And now offensively, that gives us a little bit more wiggle room to give ourselves a better chance. I think during the stretch, what you've seen is more decisive play from them in the half court. I think that Brook Lopez's his ability to pick and roll, pick and pop, and also space the floor can open things up. But you're starting to see more of the combinations that work for them. So defensively, you see Nick Batum harassing people. You see Chris Dunn's effort. Brook Lopez looks a lot better defensively when, hey, just be in a drop and we'll figure it out, as opposed to, hey, come off the bench, maybe do this, maybe do that, and we'll, you know, that's not necessarily going to work for him all the time. So I think what you're just seeing is a consistent effort. And I think that's what the Clippers had to do to kind of try and figure it out, because winning's hard. But if you are able to have enough defense with James Harden, with Kawhi Leonard, we know that is a formula for a version of success. Now, how far can they take this? Who knows? But this feels a lot better than where they were 2-3 weeks ago.
Yeah, I think, again, the defense has just been huge. Like you mentioned, we talked a little bit about Kawhi. You mentioned Nicholas Batum, what he's been able to do. Chris Dunn, what he continues to do. Derrick Jones Jr. now back in the fold. And I am excited to see just, one, having that kind of athleticism on the floor. Like, shout out to the young guys that have cracked the rotation as the Clippers were trying to find themselves, who also bring an element of that. But, like, Derrick Jones Jr. naturally just deeper in the league, just has more of an identity on that front. And so, like, adding him as a guy that can defend at the point of attack sometimes, if you want to ramp things up, we can have him flying around the back end to challenge some shots at the rim. We get into transition. Now, here's just a target that's streaking down the floor that you can throw lobs to, unlock that element of James Harden's game again, some of the early offense stuff. And so I've just enjoyed this defense. And to your Brook Lopez portion, it was interesting to me, you know, even going back to the Detroit game, they had him in a drop, but they didn't mind, at least early in that game. Now, we'll bring you up to the level. Let's make sure Cade can't turn the corner. We're going to make sure that you don't have a good time. And I think it was a scoreless first half for Cade Cunningham in that basketball game, which made the Kawhi performance feel even louder, because, like, well, darn, we got this star battle. And Kawhi is getting all the buckets and then drops 26 in the third quarter. And Cade Cunningham, you make a basket early in that third quarter, things spark like an 8-0 run. Oh, you just scored. That's kind of neat. But, like, the fact that they can have Brook at the level sometimes, and if it doesn't work or if they just want to throw different looks, now we can drop you back. We trust our navigation in front of you. We trust the help is going to be more in line when some of these drives are happening. it makes life easier on Brooke Lopez, which to this point, Steve, I wanted to make sure I had this. So Brooke Lopez started the last three games. Ivica Zubac dealing with an ankle sprain. He's going to be out a couple of weeks. 14-6 in nearly two blocks per game since he's entered the starting lineup. Teams are shooting 44% at the rim against Brooke Lopez during the stretch.
What a shock. What a shocker.
It's almost like this is what he can do still. So contesting 9 shots at the rim during this since he's joined the starting lineup the last three games. Contesting 16.7 shots per game overall, 14.7 twos. All of those marks are first. The 44% mark is not first, but it's pretty high in the league among guys that are challenging a certain amount of shots. So don't want to bore you with that. But Brooke Lopez has done a very good job defensively. And when you have the element of screening, he doesn't have to get the ball. I can just pry James Harden open. I can just pry Kawhi Leonard open. It makes the offense better. When you have the performance like Portland, where actually I could just set the tone in this first quarter because I am just bombing away. I will say quickly on that front, I did not expect, what was it, like the first 12 shots for the Clippers were threes or something along that line?
He was cooking.
He was cooking. The Clippers were just getting them up. So the fact that they kind of shape-shift in that way is interesting at the very least. Those shots obviously have to fall. But Brooke Lopez has been such a steadying force for them. So he deserves his kudos. And then circling back to James Harden.
Finally, yes, let's go. Yeah, yeah. I've been waiting, baby.
Oh, man. Like, he has been the mainstay of this group. He has been the rock of this group as the Clippers were churning through their turning to those muddy waters early in the year where they didn't have that identity. You can count on, well, James Harden's about to have 28-8. He's going to drive. He's going to play make. He's going to knock down threes. He might get back in transition defense. He might not. But at the very least, he's going to carry this offensive load. And so the fact that Kawhi has been so good and the second unit has stepped up to such a degree, and Brooke Lopez has done all this, James Harden is averaging 28-7 during his winning streak, and it feels quiet. And it shouldn't, because he still shoulders a pretty big load offensively. The playmaking remains important. The three-point shot making remains important. But the drives continue to hit, Steve. It's something I was looking up ahead of the show, because I know he has been one of the most effective drivers in basketball this year. But during this win streak, 1.25 points per possession on any trip featuring a James Harden drive, which is insanity. But related to that, Steve, as Second Spectrum / Genius IQ, they track blowby rate. Just how cleanly are you winning the drives? How often are you doing it? Oh, blowby on nearly 41% of his drives this year, Steve, during this win streak. Overall, this year is at 37.5%. That is fifth among 82 players with at least 200 drives to this point. This is his highest blowby rate in at least 6 years, because this tracking has it kind of shifted over to Genius IQ. It goes back to the 2020-2021 season. And so I would love to see like where that was during, you know, the MVP years in Houston, et cetera, just kind of compare. But like, it's pretty much a 38% blowby rate on drives this year. In 2020-2021, that was at 21.8%. This is we get into the Philly stint or the Brooklyn stint, the Philly stint where it's like, ooh, when James Harden has it, he can do this, but how consistently does it have it? He looks like a new dude. And this is when, considering he was shouldering that heavier load earlier in the year while Kawhi was out and they were trying to find themselves. And like, this is ramped up as he's gotten more help. And so you still get all of the good James Harden stuff in addition to everyone else kind of coming along with it. So like, he just deserves so much credit for what this season has been overall. And he is continuing to play very well during this win streak.
I mean, it's the most points he's averaged since 1920, and he's still one of four players averaging 25, 8, and 5. So, I mean, you got to put some respect on James Harden's name, and I'm glad you did so.
Yeah, it's been good stuff. Can I circle back to a couple of Kawhi things really quickly?
Sure.
Just on the numbers front, while I'm dumping the notes, because we were talking a little bit before the show. I was like, hey, I had Kawhi thoughts. I've enjoyed watching him. I had some basic stuff. I ended up going down a rabbit hole with what Kawhi has been doing. Once getting into, okay, this feels good. What is he actually averaging, et cetera? So Kawhi Leonard, during this win streak, I already mentioned 56% on twos, 44% on threes, on high volume. He has an effective field goal percentage, which just accounts for twos and threes, of 59.7%. He is outperforming his expected shot quality. So where you're taking the shot, what type of shot it is, what the contest level is, et cetera. He's outperforming that by 11 percentage points, Steve. He is not supposed to be doing this. And Kawhi Leonard, you know, Kevin Durant's another guy, pretty consistent overperformers in this kind of metric. So he's been even more absurd than usual. Mentioned a little bit earlier, I love the way the Clippers have been moving them around the board, the way that they set up his touches with off-ball screens, the post-ups, the pick-and-roll play. all that pop during that game against the Detroit Pistons in particular, but he's been doing all this stuff. So I was like, okay, what is he actually doing during this win streak? On trips featuring a Kawhi Leonard dribble handoff, 1.5 points per possession. On isolations, 1.19 points per possession. On post-ups, 1.29 points per possession. In pick and roll, 1.12 points per possession. Flat point per possession on off-ball screens. And 1.18 points per possession on drives. It is literally everything, Steve. He's in Terminator mode right now. It has been so much fun to watch. So I just wanted to salute him on that front. I guess last question I have for you before I switch gears here. Because John Collins was starting, got hurt. You have Chris Dunn to start lineup. Do you want to see any sort of tweaks to the start lineup once the crew gets even healthier? Are you fine with them rocking with Dunn still in, Collins in alongside? I imagine Zubac's going to replace Lopez when he's healthy. But
I think you go two defenders. If you want to do Batum, that's fine. Or if you want to go Derrick Jones Jr. once he's healthy, that's fine. But I think you go your two star players, a big, and two defenders. That's your formula.
Okay. Understood. All right. Well, that's my Clipper thought. Steve, do you have a team that you would like to discuss?
Well, I know you're very excited. So I just wanted to briefly mention, is anyone paying attention to what the Miami Heat are currently doing right now offensively? Because I think it ties back to my earlier point. But if you look at the Heat, right, a little bit of a winning streak. They scored 142 against the Pacers. They scored 147 against the Denver Nuggets. Get well soon, Nikola Jokic. Mm-hmm. That's the seventh time this season they have scored 140 or more points, which again is the most in Miami Heat franchise history. They've scored 130 or more 10 times this season. They are all-time 15-0 when they score 140 or more points. And I think what it ties to is what I was talking about a little bit earlier as far as identity. Does this mean that this is what Miami is offensively? I wouldn't say that. Can they get hot and make shots? Yes. Does that help? But I think there's a decisiveness to their offensive game plan that is going to help them throughout this stretch of the season. It's going to be highs and lows. But, you know, they played Denver, and Denver came out and said, hey, we're going to play zone. And Miami said, no, you're not. Doesn't matter. We're going to move the ball. Denver comes back and battles back, and Miami finds a way to figure it out. And so what's going to be interesting for Miami over the course of this season is, okay, how do we figure out how to make the most of it? They're going to play fast. They're going to get the ball up. They're going to try and drive and kick. We know what they're going to do. We've seen the struggles against size, against length, against teams that cut the paint off when the shots aren't falling. But that hasn't necessarily slowed them down, which I think is a key part for Miami. I think it's a positive for them. So now, can they enhance it? Can they make the most out of it? Can they build on that to find a way to grow throughout this season? That's where I'm trying to figure out, okay, what does this mean? How does this operate? What's the ceiling on this? Because it could be, you know, I think when you have a team that doesn't get shaken to their core when things aren't right, that's a positive. So that's where I'm kind of at, thinking in the back of my brain, okay, is Miami setting themselves up for the right matchup for the right time? But I mean, when you have Norm Powell playing at this level and you have the bench being able to slot in different ways and Jokic coming back and having an impact and Jaime Jaca has been really consistent, there's a feeling that, okay, we may struggle against certain teams, and we've seen when they get into quick shot territory against the Bostons, the Orlandos, New Yorks, and let teams back in games, but it hasn't taken away from, like, they're not slowing down. I think that's positive.
Okay. I like that. Like, I think, to your point, the sustainability of their style and their commitment to, we are going to push no matter what, can get them in trouble sometimes, but like, it does kind of speak to the buy-in. I do think that is a positive. And I think within that, and what we've kind of seen, and this is something that you've talked about already with our earlier Heat conversations, like, yes, they are last in pick and roll volume and they're last in like screening volume overall, but it's not like they literally do not do it. And they do have their selective moments, like, okay, we haven't scored in two or three possessions. We are now going to set up this stagger for Norman Powell, or this pin down for Norman Powell. We are now going to make sure we screen for Andrew Wiggins before he flows into a handoff. We are going to get into some pick and roll with Bam Adebayo as a screener, just to kind of grease the wheels. We need to get something, and then we can get back flow base when we get some stops, et cetera. And so, like, it's been interesting tracking. Like, the pick and roll volume for Miami in particular is starting to rise as the season has gone on.
Shocker.
It's felt like a little bit more of that. Like, yeah, that was going to happen. But again, like, still just lower than everyone else. But it, like, it's been fun to track. Like, okay, yeah, they are starting to see this. But you heard, like, when Tyler Herro made his return, a little bit of rumblings. Like, hey, not even rumblings, just post-game comments. Like, yeah, I think we can run a little bit more pick and roll. You look at Norman Powell on the podcast. Like, Yeah, I think we can run a little bit more pick and roll. I think you and talking to Bam, I think you and Tyler still have really good chemistry there. We can sprinkle more of that in. I don't know why in certain sectors of Heat Twitter that turned into, see, they hate this offense. Like, well, I don't think anybody said that. I just think, like, it does not have to be we run 85 pick and rolls a game or we run 7. There's a lot of room between the two. And I think saying, hey, we can do a little bit more does not mean we need to kill this style altogether. And so in the ideal world with the Miami Heat, you get the blend of free flow where Davion Mitchell is empowered and Norm Powell is empowered and Jaime Hawkins Jr. is empowered and Nikola Jovic is empowered coming off the bench. Maybe not as empowered as he was when he made his return against Atlanta, because I got a lot of chuckles of that man checking in and immediately saying, it is my turn. I was like, okay. At least he's not shy. That's cool. Let's probably calm down on a few of these shot attempts. That's okay. But you have the overall empowerment. And then when the chips are down, we have pet actions or pet sets for Bam, for Norm Powell, for Tyler Herro when he comes back, for Andrew Wiggins. It all just makes more sense. And like the wild card within all of this, and I'll toss it to you, Steve. Hey, man, if Khalil Ware is going to shoot like this, that does just kind of open things up figuratively and literally.
I wasn't going to say it, but I'm glad you said it. It's interesting that he's just knocking these down. No hesitation, letting it fly. I mean, I think for me, the biggest thing is I'm very intrigued to see what this Miami-Detroit matchup looks like at this point in the season. Mm-hmm. And, can Miami do that against a physical defense like Detroit? And can they sustain that against a physical defense like Detroit? And or is that going to be another mirror game where, okay, we're closer to where we want to be, but we have to get back to just kind of consistent execution and finding a way to win. Well, again, that's the fun part of this part of the season. Like, struggles are going to be had. Who's learning from them and who's just kind of in a box?
I would just say one comment and then one quick question before we move to this next team. One, the comment on Khalil Ware, 47% from three on nearly 3 attempts a game this year now. I don't think it's that. But there is just a level of comfort that he has taking these shots where it's like, I think that we are going to reach a point very soon where he's just averaging 4 attempts a game pretty easily. And if he settles in mid to high 30s, you certainly take that with some of the vertical value that he brings as a roller and just kind of roaming the dunker spot, things like that. The question that I had as you brought up the Heat Pistons lineup, the Pistons didn't raise to the level of, team that make me go, and like to have a full blown segment on them. Where are you at with their half-court offense, though?
I mean, they are a team that can be methodical, then get slowed down. And I think it's just, okay, on the nights that our defense is not playing at a super high level, what can we do? So they just lose their margin of error. I think if you look at the two losses against Utah and against the Clippers, they were getting hit by offenses. And so they were scoring on the other end, but you didn't feel the impact as much because, hey, y'all are getting dinged. So we're constantly operating in the half court a lot more than we're used to a degree. And so now it looks a little different. It's kind of like the opposite of Minnesota to a degree, where you feel their offense more when their defense is hitting at a high level. So it's not necessarily concerning. It's more just though, don't lose the movement. Don't lose the attack mentality. Don't make it, okay, we're in a tough one. Cade, please make every play.
Okay. It's just... Because I know we talked earlier in the year about Detroit, and this is, again, during the high point of their season, and they are still the best team in the Eastern Conference right now. So I want to make sure that context is still laid out there. But, like, even within that, I asked you, like, hey, they have this defense because of some of the guys they're playing, but that does, in theory, give teams a little bit more room to help off of, Asar when he's in. If Durant isn't directly involved, we can show some help there and stuff. And, like, what does that mean for, like, Cade and his creation, the space they have to operate, et cetera? And so, like, I've just still been monitoring that. That's why I wanted to ask you. As we record, the Pistons are 18th in half-court offense. They perform at a top 10 level when Cade is on the floor, but that is, like, that's very much 10th versus, like, flirting with, like, a top 5 rating that we see with some of the other stars in the league where they're really high when they're on. There's a big drop when they're off, that kind of thing. So it's like, okay, they don't need to be the 14 Spurs when you have a defense like this. But like just seeing how teams want to poke at things. Like that was another reason why Kawhi on Asar really stood out to me early on. It's like, okay, we got Brook at the level sometimes. We still have Kawhi on the back end. How often can we get to Jalen Duren short roll stuff where we have both talked about, and you in particular have talked about how good he's been, knocking out a bunch of mid-range shots, putting people underneath the basket, making the right passes. But like, where are those shots being funneled? It's just like, okay, let's just continue to monitor this. Because I think if the Pistons hit a certain level, like they can just get to the finals this year. But if they don't, I think the half court offense is going to be wide.
Nakai is doubting a good defensive team with question marks in the half court. A story as old as time. Much appreciated.
Well, speaking of a good defense with a questionable half court offense, just kidding. But no, I wanted to talk about the Brooklyn Nets before we got out of here, before we move. Because Steve, before the season, said on the KLC show, said in our season preview, I was like, this Nets team gives me vibes of that 21-22 Thunder team, where that Thunder squad, they were a top 10 defense through the All-Star break before injuries, shutdowns, all that good stuff. They finished 17th overall. I was like, you know what? With the way that they defended to close the year, with what Jordy Fernandez wants to do, I believe this could be a top 10 defense through the first 2-3 months of the season. First 10 games of the year, Steve, the Brooklyn Nets were not only the worst defense in basketball, they were on pace to easily be the worst defense in NBA history. Through their first 10 games of the year, Steve, the Brooklyn Nets had a 129.8 defensive rating per clean the glass. They gave up 120 or more points in 7 of their first 10 games. Jordy was in post-game pressers like, this is on me. I have to figure out a way to get my team to care or to play hard. And I'm just like, what do you mean you have to beg these professional basketball players to give effort defensively? It's just the whole thing. But that was through the first 10 games of the year, so through November 9th. Since November 10th, the Brooklyn Nets are 6th in defense. Since the beginning of December, the Brooklyn Nets have the best defense in basketball. And when I tell you, I have enjoyed the level of activity that they've displayed. They will sprinkle in the full court pressure looks or the three quarters court looks. But in the half court, since November 10th in particular, they are first in switch rate. They are first in blitz rate, which is really just 2 on the ball rate because it's not always a trap when looking at that number. But either way, and I tweeted recently, I think this was during the Wolves game, I was like, they oscillate between trusting their size and actively weaponizing it. And what I meant by that is that because we have a level of switchability 3-5 with some of the lines that we can toss out there, yeah, we can just flatten out some of these pick and rolls that y'all want to run, or a lot of these pick and rolls that you want to run. Or if you have a ball handler that we don't want to get busy, we don't want them to turn the corner, or we just don't trust you can handle it, yeah, we'll have Nick Claxton at the level, or he'll just spring a random trap on you if he feels like you didn't retreat quickly enough. And so, like, the fact that they're able to kind of blend those coverages in, first in switch rate, first in blitz rate, I think they're bottom three in terms of how often they're actually dropping their bigs. So Nick Claxton will do it. If they slide Noah Clowney down, they'll do it, but he's more so a switch guy. They run Sharper come in. He's active at the level. They've just done such a good job of dictating terms defensively during this run. And the fact that the backline rotations are actually happening, because they largely were not during the first 10 games of the year. I remember when we had our opening week episode and I was yelling about that Nets Hornets game, where I'm just like, why is MPJ just not moving at all? What is this? It's been night and day in terms of that effort, and not just the initial effort, but the second and third efforts that we're seeing. And so, like, watching that defense, it gives them such a baseline to be competitive. This is where you have the 7-4 December. This is where you have recent wins over the Raptors, though a lot of people killed the Raptors for that loss. It was the second night of a back-to-back for them, and they traveled. Like, I didn't take that to heart as much as other people did, but either way, held the Raptors to 81 points. They beat the Sixers. They beat the Wolves by 16. And it's all coming from the defense. And so I have offense thoughts, too, but I did want to just quickly say, shout out to the Brooklyn Nets defense for finally doing the thing. They have been good for quite some time now. I've enjoyed watching them fly around. Did you have any Nets thoughts? Or is this just going to be an ISO? Because I don't mind.
Clearly.
Not clearly. That's crazy.
I mean, I think the biggest thing for me with Brooklyn has been a team that has grown throughout the season. They grind you offensively. Michael Porter Jr. has played really well, and the defense has shown a great level of activity. And so this is what you are as a team. When you build throughout the season, you get better throughout the season. That's the hope and the dream. Identity and culture gets thrown around a lot, but how do you execute it when you are going through struggles? And so that's where you give a salute to the Nets for putting themselves in a high position defensively in this month of December, where most teams are trying to figure things out. You make a leap, it's positive.
There you go. And I'll just quickly say before we get to the break, 28-8-4 for MPJ during the month of December. Like, he was like all-star honorable mention for me. I think he's just, he's probably just firmly an all-star at this point, especially for factoring in any kind of injuries. Like, he's just been that good. The way he's been utilized, the movement, the playmaking has really popped when he's been able to get downhill. Jordy does a good job of scheming him downhill with some of the off-ball screens and the angles in which they take to get him easier touches. That's been fun. Nick Claxton continues to wow me with the drives and the playmaking. His chemistry with MPJ continues to pop. Yegor Jonas shooting the leather off the ball, Steve. We're talking about these Nets rookies. He's shooting it well. Danny Wolf playmaking has been a joy to watch. Drake Powell, whenever he gets minutes, he's just going to defend his tail off. That part's been fun. Nolan Traore gets downhill quite a bit. I'm going to keep an eye on the screen navigation, but he's at least pesky at the point of attack. Yeah, I've enjoyed watching this Nets team. And welcome back, Cam Thomas. Just obliterated the Minnesota Timberwolves in his return game. Wasn't a pounded into the court game. A lot of off-ball move for him as well. So shout out to the Brooklyn Nets. We're going to take a break here, but once we return, going to talk about some teams that have us thinking a little bit. So don't go anywhere. We'll be back shortly.
The NBA YouTube channel is live. The smartest NBA coverage on YouTube 5 days a week. Watch the Dunker Spot with Nekias Duncan and myself. Elite Hoops Talk, great X's and O's conversations. Kevin O'Connor giving you that deep analysis and the sharpest hoops conversations you can find in the land. Every week, Tom Haberstroh and Dan Devine will be breaking down the stats that define the league on the Big Number. And plus, you get fast daily NBA updates and trends from Dan Titus to keep you ahead of the timeline. If you love basketball, welcome home.
And we are back with this episode of the Dunker Spot. And Steve, it is time to post up. So I will concede the floor to you. Are there any teams that are making you think? Any teams that intrigue you right now? Some things that kind of pop for you as of late?
Well, we share the floor. My mind is going to, one, the Philadelphia 76ers. I'm just bookmarking that for accountability because I have been thinking about them all season long. I don't know what to make of them because I think they're good, but I'm not sure exactly how good they are. But it's the San Antonio Spurs. An interesting stretch for the San Antonio Spurs where you beat the Oklahoma City Thunder three times in 12 days. Put yourself in a position where people are wondering, hey, not only are you the second best team in the West, are you just a championship contender? And then you lose consecutive home games to Utah and the Cleveland Cavaliers, which is tied back to my theme for the day, which is, hey, it's not easy to win. And what's your identity and what are teams doing to you? So what gets interesting to me is, okay, one thing you've done is you've made the switch. Victor Wembanyama is back in the starting lineup, something we expected to happen at some point. Couldn't always come off the bench, even though I wanted to push the sixth man of the year agenda for giggles. Okay, how is that disrupting the flow offensively? Are your guards getting involved early? Is Wimby looking to drive? How are we using Wimby? It just kind of changes the dynamic just a little bit. And then another thing I'm looking at is just trying to understand and grasp how are teams going to try and poke at the Spurs defensively. So we've seen Victor Wembanyama be a force on defense. We know what he does as far as protecting the rim. He really alters shots. He's great at rotating. We've seen him switch, get back to the baseline. How are teams starting to poke at that? And so you saw a little bit between Utah and Cleveland as far as, okay, we're going to space Yusuf Nurkic on the wing. And we're going to count on you making this rotation. And then we're going to dive. Or if you guys are going to rotate behind Victor Wembanyama's help, we're going to cut to disrupt those rotations. And we're going to poke at you in that way to kind of just make it a little uneasy so it's not as automatic for you. If you look at the Cleveland game, Jared Allen just kind of snaking around the dunker spot area, around the baseline. So when Wembanyama was holding or looking to rotate on drives, hey, we can find this pass. We're going to put someone who you may think is a non-shooter in the corner because we know you're going to roam and you're going to help. Now it's an open look for us that we feel confident we can knock down. So is that something that becomes, like I like to call, not a book on a team, but is this something that other teams can implement? You know, copycat league as far as, okay, when we're watching, we're scouting for a team. If I see something that we can replicate that a team struggles with, we may put it in and we may try and poke at you. So does it get interesting in that aspect where San Antonio gets back to a box of having to deal with team switching? People are able to poke at San Antonio's defense a little bit more. That's going to be something that I feel like they may have to navigate at some point during the season. So I'm just intrigued by that portion. I think they're really good. Wimby's really good. But at the same time, okay, what's their next challenge? I think that's where my mind goes.
No, I think that is a fair one. I kind of want to hang with the where are you spacing Wimby portion a bit. Because like that was you know, as a sicko, I'm always going to be intrigued by like Utah versus good team, because like, what is that going to look like with what Utah wants to do on both ends of the floor, and particularly offensively? And so, like, I'm glad you mentioned like spacing Wimby at the wing with Nurk in particular, who just quietly having a solid year in Utah, by the way. So it's just like Utah has been so good under Will Hardy at, we're going to space our big up here. You can play off if you want to. We are going to flare someone behind it. We're going to set a pin in if we need to. Or you can just toss it to me. We can flow right at the two-man game. And like that can naturally disrupt some of the roaming that Wimby or any kind of defensive big wants to do in that spot. And so like I have my eyes on that matchup. So I'm glad you brought that portion of the program up. And like that's a question that I've been thinking about for a while when it comes to Victor Wembanyama, because of how much of the floor he can take away defensively. Like, what is the best way to go at him if you can? Like one of the early things that I noted in the Christmas Day matchup between OKC and San Antonio is like in that first quarter, it was not always successful, but I was like, oh, some of these drives for OKC are a little bit deeper than they were in the previous two matchups. They're like actively going at Wimby a little bit more. Like they recognize we have to get some real estate in the paint. Like we can't just wall off and take a bunch of jumpers. We kind of have to do something different. You had some of the late cutting that was happening behind them. So as you mentioned, some of the dives in the Utah matchup, like that also brought that back to mind. I was like, okay, so here's some things. OKC did not sustain it. Their offense eventually died. But it's like, okay, here's some elements here. And like, I do wonder if teams get to a point to where they land on, yeah, let's actually have him just at the wing and have and cut somebody from that corner and just keep that guy spaced on the wing. Cause I feel like that's something that you see from teams during like traditional pick and rolls a lot anyway, where you may have like that corner to wing lift, or as they're setting something up, that guy from the opposite corner is going to cut through while the pick and roll is happening. And you just have someone on the wing, so it ends up being an empty corner more than an empty side kind of pick and roll. Like, is that something that you use to kind of play with Wimby? And does that unlock any kind of other off-ball things there?
I think it has to be a blend. You have to poke at a little bit of everything. I don't think you can show him one look, because it's more, can we disrupt the help behind the helper purely than exposing just his help? So can we put him in positions where he's in different spots? So where we switch, get him on the wing, and now we set a flare on him to keep him involved in an action while we're trying to do something else. Can we get him in stack, pick, and roll? So now he's in the action, but also, okay, are you navigating it back to the rim? Can we play off of you rotating from the baseline and get a kick and play out of that? So I think it's more just setting the table to move the pieces around, because I don't think it's going to be one simple thing. If you just go empty corner, he's just going to roam over there. He's super tall, and they're going to be able to rotate behind it. But I think if you can put them in a position where we're playing off of Wimby's rotations and we're also making everyone else do something a little bit different, that's when we can open things up.
Okay. I think that's fair. I guess to the offensive integration with him being in the starting lineup now, I guess I was expecting a more fluid transition than what I've seen, especially with just how they've been able to have that blend since he's been back. But like, I don't have any, and I don't think you do either, but like, I don't have any long-term concerns about that ultimately getting there. Like, I think their drivers are just too good. And I think all three of those guys have developed a level of chemistry with Wimby either on and off the ball to where you can just make that work. So I think that's going to be more of a time deal. But it has been interesting seeing some of the hitches. Like, you saw a little bit of that in the Cleveland game, where it's like, oh, okay, this isn't as free-flowing, quick attack, y'all are in the scramble mode, oh no, as we were seeing in some of those during some of those stretches in the Thunder matchup. So I think it is worth keeping an eye on indeed. While I guess loosely related to the Spurs, since they just played 3 times in 12 days, as you mentioned, I wanted to bring up the Thunder, who are coming off of a pair of double-digit wins. So, like, they are right back, still on pace for, like, 70 wins. Like, I am still, before I get into any of the questions or thoughts that I have, still the best team in the West, still the best team in the league to me, still on pace for 70. I still think they are the title favorites. So I want to set that aside. This is where I am at still as of now.
So what are we doing here?
Well, now, with that set aside, it brings me back to kind of what you were mentioning earlier with, has a team just got us, or is there something that we're putting on film consistently that other teams can kind of take parts of and bother us? And like, that was my bigger thing zooming out from the Spurs matchups, which not only 3-0, they beat you at home, they beat you on the road, and they beat you in a neutral site. Like, it's kind of tough to get that literal trifecta in that short amount of time. But I was just kind of wondering how much of those issues are Spurs / Wimby specific versus, okay, maybe the Rockets can get to some of this if they match up in the second round. Maybe insert Western Conference team here. And so, like, that brought the microscope back to Jalen Williams and Chet Holmgren to me. because in the Spurs games, they were not themselves. Jalen Williams obviously working his way back into comfort from the injury. So, like, I have grace, a natural level of grace there. So I don't want to put too much on that. But in those Spurs matchups, 15.3 points per game on roughly 45% true shooting. Took 11 threes, 36 twos, didn't get to the rim a ton. His average shot distance was 14 feet in those matchups. Against everyone else in the league, the average shot distance around 11 feet. Natural indicator of, okay, the rim shots just have not really been there. Chet Holmgren, similar thing. 11 points on 51 true shooting against the Spurs this year. 8 threes, 19 twos, average shot distance of 13 feet, about 12 feet against everyone else. And so I just kind of wonder, something that you brought up as we were talking about these games, is teams being more willing to put smaller players on Chet. This is not a new problem. We saw it last year. We saw it the year before last. He answered the bell enough last season as the Thunder ended up winning their championship. But even during the finals, there were elements of, hey, haven't heard from Chet in a little bit offensively. It'd be nice for him to have a surge here, et cetera. And so, like, I just kind of wonder, even with that, is this still just something Chet has to solve? Are we going to see more teams just naturally match up with wing on Chet? Or can the Spurs hit him in very specific ways? And with Jalen Williams and some of the half-court creation, when he's at his best in transition, he's at his best in the half-court when he has the pull-up midi going. And for me, I want this to be the mid-range is a very effective counter for him versus this is kind of my default when I have to self-create. And so again, Victor Wembanyama brings a level of, well, I really can't get to the rim if he's on the court right now. But like, this is a process thing with Jalen that even as I was super high on him last year, as you very well know, that was still something that I brought up, like, hey, how often is he getting all the way to the rim? Because I think he could be more helpful there. So like, those are just kind of things I was like,
Well, I think the overall concept, if you're looking at the Thunder, is if you're a team facing them, how many of our guys do we feel comfortable guarding Jalen Williams and Chet Holmgren? If we feel like we could switch a whole bunch of people on them, okay, are we ready to live with the result? Are we able to keep them in front? And does this slow them down? I think that's overall the mindset you'd be going for if you're trying to do that. Now, it quickly changes if Jalen Williams is able to win a matchup or Chet's able to win a matchup. And now, okay, we're not making them less decisive and they're scoring or getting free throws out of this. Is this sustainable? So I think you have to ask yourself how many teams can put that amount of defenders on those two, because you still have to deal with Shea and you're only going to have so many people that you feel comfortable with guarding Shea. So how many teams can really switch everything? Houston has some lineups they can get to, but you know, can you do that consistently? I think that's the key. How many guys you got for those two and does it slow them down?
Okay. So that was just a thought bubble. Again, I didn't want to hang there too long on the Thunder because, again, I am still very high on them and I still think they win the championship as of today. But, hey, hard not to think a little bit bigger picture after those Spurs matchups. So I had the Thunder. The Cavs, I'm just kind of in, like, what does this mean mode right now. They're 3-2 in their last five. We get the somewhat recent win over the Charlotte Hornets from Cleveland where Darius Garland looks good. Sam Merrill makes his return. He's knocking down shots. He's driving. The off-ball movement helps grease the wheels of their half-court offense overall. And Darius says something to the effect of, like, this is starting to feel more like Cleveland Cavaliers basketball again. I was like, okay, I like this. Specific to Darius Garland, who has been put in action a lot defensively this year, which makes sense because of the size, and also he is still very much working through whatever this toe injury is that continues to linger for him. But you've seen the aggression from him perk up as a scorer. He's taking more of those pull-up threes. More of those are starting to fall, particularly as of late. The drives for him when he does get drop coverage, getting a little bit deeper into the paint. That's opened up the floater. It's opened up some of the scoops. That's opened up some of the lobs for him. Like, he's feeling better. Donovan Mitchell continues to be lethal offensively. You get Evan Mobley back. He looks pretty good. And then you have, like, the Rockets game. And it's just like, oh, well, all these positive strides, and then you just get blasted. Like, I don't really love that. But then they beat the Spurs. And it's just like, okay. They clearly have this in them. Jared Allen has himself one heck of a game. And so I'm just kind of like, I want to believe in the Cleveland Cavaliers getting healthier and turning things around. And it feels like anytime I want to say, actually, this is just not going to happen. Too much has happened. Too many injuries, too many rotation questions. I don't know what's happening in the wing room outside of Jalen Tyson, yada, yada, yada. Then they have a big win and they play well against the New York Knicks on Christmas. And they probably should have won that game. It's like, okay, here we go. I get hype about the Cleveland Cavaliers. And then no. it's like I'm just in a weird spot with the Cavs right now.
You just tie it back to their identity. I think that it's an uphill climb for Cleveland. They've been trying to figure out how to navigate through injuries. Their defense hasn't hit the same levels. Offensively, they've been good at times, but what kind of offense is this? Are we just taking a bunch of threes? Are we generating the type of shots we want to? Now, as they get healthier, okay. It looks better offensively, but you still have some of the defensive question marks, aka we're putting your guards in action, and can you be consistent with what you want to do with that? And then offensively, can you consistently generate the type of shots you want? So I think they're just fighting two different battles at the same time while trying to climb up in the standings. So I think it probably one of those teams you feel better about if they have more wins. But it's one of those teams that's pretty dangerous if they can figure it out. And they this is the type of stretch that can help you down the line. It's just all about positioning.
Understood. Last quick thing for me on the Cavs. Again, 12-point win over the Spurs in this matchup. We did get Craig Porter Jr. minutes off the bench. No Lonzo Ball in this one. The drives and the playmaking really hit for Craig Porter Jr. I don't know if that was just matchup-based, something random, schedule-based, or if this is actually going to be a rotation change in Cleveland. So keeping an eye on that. And lastly, I'm just upset with the Atlanta Hawks. I think it's just kind of where I'm at. I had like a whole rant, but I'm just going to truncate it for now. Like the defense is just an abomination right now, and this weird start into, oh my goodness, they're defending at a top 10 level, then it's like weird, and then they get back to around the top 10 level, and then they have just been an absolute disaster as of late. Transition matchups, we don't know who's getting who, and on some possessions I don't even care to get someone. Like, there is, like, the Trae Young size problem where he's going to get put into action, but, like, that's already – that should just be baked into the formula at this point. But, like, some of the off-ball stuff has just been wonky. It's – you're not going to be the team you want to be if this is going to be – forget the execution for a minute. If this is going to be the effort and attention to detail that you're going to display, you're not going to win games. And this is where the Trae Young trade talks start to heat up once again. And it's untenable. I would love to be spending more time on what the Jalen Johnson, Trae Young pick and rolls have been. I love when they go inverted, the problems they compose and stuff like that. But it's just like, this defense is just giving me a headache. It's bad. It is bad. And it needs to be better. There we go. With that, we're going to take another break because I clearly need to cool off thinking about the Atlanta Hawks and the defense. But when we return, we got the first returns of All-Star voting. We have thoughts. All right, Steve, we are back with the Dunker Spot, and it is time to talk about All-Star returns. We got the first batch. Steve, as you know, fans account for 50%. Split 25% between the players and the media. But your starters via the fans as of the first returns in the Western Conference, Luka Doncic, Nikola Jokic, Stephen Curry, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and Victor Wembanyama, who is fifth in the West, also does not have a million votes. Neither does Shai. So that part is interesting. In the Eastern Conference, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Tyrese Maxey, Jalen Brunson, Cade Cunningham, Donovan Mitchell. Any surprises for you, Steve? Or just what were your initial thoughts when you saw the first return?
For me personally, no surprises. A little bit surprised by Tyrese Maxey being two in the East. But if you go back to our All-Star episode about 10, 11 days ago, I gave you 9 of these 10 in the starting lineup. So no, I'm not surprised by this because I used my big boy brain. But what I would say is interesting that I asked what's going to happen to the bigs. And there's not a lot of bigs on this list on either side. There are but there's not a ton. So it's intriguing to see there are just some names missing, in my opinion. Number two, I think you start to see different combinations. And so if you're wondering, okay, why does Shai only have so many votes? Why does Wimby have so many votes? If everyone goes Luka, Nikola, Stephen Curry, that's 3 out of 5. And now you may pick an Ant. You know, you may pick a KD. You may pick a LeBron. So there's like it's a different kind of split than I think we're normally used to because it's just 5 straight up players. Not surprised that the East is doing 4 guards at all, just because they've been playing at a high level and Giannis is going to be there. So it'll be interesting to see if Jalen Brown's able to catch Donovan Mitchell to a degree. But I'm intrigued because it's 50% of the vote. So depending on what this happens and depending on if the media or the players push someone, we could end up with something that gets tricky. But I do think this will probably settle into the 10. Unless Jaylen Brown makes a comeback, I don't see, unless Anthony Edwards is a wild card, but I don't know if he overtakes Wimby. So I think, I kind of think this is it.
Okay. I like it. So as, oh, go ahead.
Well, no, I was going to set it up because if you're a new listener to the Dunker Spot, if you are a long-term dunker, Mekhi's Duncan really has a great time with these all-star returns and really has deep respect for the fan vote. Shout out to Andrew Wiggins. So Mekhi's, did you have any thoughts about this?
I, unsurprisingly to the long-term dunkers, had quite a few thoughts
okay.
about this all-star list. So not necessarily top of mind for me, but I will say the biggest story from this, as we look at the returns, LeBron James, 9th in the Western Conference, I think 15th overall in terms of the first returns. Now, LeBron naturally has missed a lot of time, et cetera, but one of the things that we talked about when we had our all-star discussion a few days ago was what are people going to do with LeBron? Because on one hand, he is at absolute worst a top three player of all time. With a case for the GOAT, where you land with him and MJ, Kareem, et cetera, that's for you. That's a different podcast, whatever. But he is one of the greatest of all time. He is literally the elder statesman of the league. He is one of the most important NBA players we've ever had, et cetera. And we are not even 8 months removed from him playing at an all-NBA level. You could bake in LeBron's just going to get all these votes because he's LeBron. And on the other hand, he's missed a bunch of time. He hasn't played at an all-NBA level so far this year. The Lakers have been good, but like the integration for LeBron has been kind of odd. The defense has been what it was. It's like, where are they going to land? And it feels like the middle ground is, we're still giving you top 10 love, but you are not a starter. You are not close to being an all-star starter. And I think if the fans don't have LeBron in the top five, I don't think the media gets him there. The players could get interesting, depending on what that split is. But I was like, but again, this is the first return. We got a long way to go before we get to February. But I was like, huh, LeBron at 9.
Salute to LeBron James. It's going to be very, very odd if this happens the way it may happen. But what I will say, just to quickly annoy you, I just think people didn't scroll far enough.
Oh God!
If they went with the default setting, I truly,
oh Lord,
I truly don't think they did. Because if you go and you go, it's just by points. So,
I feel like we had a similar bit with the W All Star voting, where I'm just like, what do you mean, insert player here is voting? It's like, well, she's averaging 13 right now. Forget the D. Oh, it was Alyssa Thomas once again, where it's like, yeah, here's your top five MVP candidate. But because she's not averaging 19 a game,
One for one for the line. Let's go. One for one. What's next? What's your next all-star thought?
So we continue to keep tabs on the LeBron of it all. Because to your point, like it would, if we're just going pure merit-based, like, no, I don't think LeBron's an all-star starter. But he is LeBron James. Which, happy birthday, LeBron James. But like, it'd be odd if he's not in this in some capacity. Like, if nothing else, it ends up being like the Dirk Wade year. Like, here's an extra spot to make sure you are involved in some capacity. And I say involved versus playing because, like, you know, we don't know how much LeBron actually wants to log 20 minutes in an all-star game at this stage. You know what I mean? He wants the time off. But yeah, that part would be odd. Moving away from LeBron, hinted at it earlier, but like 7 players with at least 1 million votes right now, and Wimby and Shea are not among that 7. Really surprises me. Shoot, Anthony Edwards being 6th in the West is a little bit surprising to me. I just bake it like more fanfare for him. In addition to, he has been really good for Minnesota this year.
It's a split. It is. Jokic is taking a lot of the fan vote, which, hey, it's good for him. He's done that. Luka is Luka, and Steph Curry. So I got 2 spots for 3 people in theory.
Yeah.
Split, man.
It makes sense, but I'm just, you know, initial thoughts like, I didn't think this is how it was going to, in terms of the standings, like, I can get to at 6, considering the names ahead of him, but, like, looking at the actual vote total, I was like, that is a lot lower than what I thought that's
understood.
That's fine. Circling to the East very quickly, going to pivot slightly, actually, because, like, I have room to be like, I don't feel bad because of how the results shake out. I would like to give Jaylen Brown an apology on this very podcast. Because when we had our all-star conversation, he was in the hunt for me to be like that fifth starter for me. Ultimately landed on Jalen Duren because, one, he's also played at an all-star level. And to your big man thoughts, I have Duren thoughts. But I was like, he's played at a super high level on both ends of the floor. He is part of the East leading Detroit Pistons. And I also want a little bit more size in the start lineup. So there was like the preference deal on top of that. But landed on Jalen Duren. But Jalen Brown was in the hunt. Jalen Johnson was in the hunt, et cetera. Jalen Brown should just be an all-star starter. Just flat out. I will amend that. He should just be in. With all due respect to Jalen Duren, who still should just be an all-star for the first time this year. He's very good. Not taking him off the team. And Jalen Brown made my team. But nah, Jalen Brown's got to be in. He's been too good. He's been too consistent. He's still dropping 30. The playmaking's been solid. The defense has been good. The Celtics are still winning games.
Got it.
Yeah, I will raise my
hand. Got it. Now, hold on. One, respect to people looking at the Eastern Conference, respecting bucket getters. Two, if you're starting Jalen Brown, who are you not starting?
Oh, well, I have the games played with Giannis. So like,
he's going to be there.
He is going to be there. So like,
he's going to be there. He's the leading vote getter.
That is true. He's going to be in. I guess even with Giannis, I guess we'll see I'm curious to see what the media does with Giannis. Because obviously when he plays, he has played and he's the best player in the conference. And he's been an MVP candidate when he's been on the floor. I do wonder where they land with like availability / team record with Giannis. Like, do we see like first with the fans, but like fourth with the media or something like that? He'll still end up in with that kind of split. But like, I am curious about that part as you bring that up. But yeah, I just want to salute Jalen Brown. So he's sixth in the East.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, I think he's just a starter. He should be in.
So who are you taking out?
If it were up to me, you know, we look at who's been on the court, and that's just unfortunate for Giannis.
But to your point, the Giannis division.
What you mean? You asking me what I would do. I'm telling you what I would do.
But he's going to be there is my point. You can't take him off.
I can. No, okay. But no, I guess in this case, if it's not Giannis, because he's just going to be baked in, like it's between Mitchell and Maxey, probably at that point.
Okay. Sheesh.
So ideally, Cleveland gets it together so I don't have to say Donovan Mitchell. Or Tyrese Maxey gets back to scoring efficiently with the Embiid integration, because like some of that's just been weird. I'll leave that there. We're not gonna do a segment. I'll save my thoughts for your
opinion. Also, very quickly, last year Antetokounmpo number one in the media, 23-24 Giannis Antetokounmpo number one in the media, 22-23 Giannis Antetokounmpo number two in the media. I think it'll be fine. Mm-hmm.
It should be, but like this is a different context when you talk about the time that's been missed.
I'm just saying
it might be a little different. That's all I'm saying. Okay, I guess circling back to the West, like I guess just looking at the team world reps, I already mentioned like the Wimby, the Shave and all. I did ask when we had our all-star conversation like how that was going to affect what fans do. So Wimby 5, I mean, you have Shave 4, you have Wimby 5. Again, both of those guys under a million votes right now. Denny at 7 was a surprise to me. You do have Şengün at 11. You have Jamal Murray at 14, which I thought that would be a little bit higher. And I guess related to that, Anthony Davis, with more votes than Jamal Murray. Based on the commentary that I've seen in Dallas Mavericks Twitter specifically, who's giving Anthony Davis the votes? Can I be respectfully messy?
Sure.
Who's giving AD the votes? Because it does not seem like anyone's particularly pleased with the AD experience right now. That one surprised me as well. Put some respect on the name of Jamal Murray, who continues to shoot the letter out of the ball. I think media / players would get him there ultimately. And he should just be on Team World either way. But that was a bit of a surprise for me. I think that'll do it in terms of like the, this is pretty, actually, back to the East. MPJ top 10 in votes. Interesting. Jalen Johnson actually getting top 10 love this year. I do need him to start defending. Like, please, let's get the defense rep back in. But Jalen Johnson got a little more love than I anticipated.
Okay.
The Knicks are very well represented. They just a lot of New York Knicks representative. Josh Hart on the list, OG on the list. You obviously have Jalen Brunson, Karl Anthony Towns. Knicks fans showed up, so salute to them.
I think it's very interesting, the balance between the East and the West, where you have the $3 million voters. There's a huge clump of like 8, 7, 6, 5. And then you go to the East and it's 4 with a million, 2 with 800. And then it gets a lot of people with 100,000. And it gets interesting real quick. Now, yearly tradition, every year that we've done this podcast, you have taken it upon yourself to yell at a fan base for not using their phones or tablets or devices. So who's getting it this year, Nikas?
Okay, so I got two.
Wow.
For me. And before I get there, Pascal Siakam also top 10 in votes. The Pacers got to have something because, that season's been something. So, one, the Houston Rockets. With all due respect, the Houston Rockets have been very good this year. They've been flirting around top five offensive defense pretty much all year long, despite some of the questions I have about three-point volume, yada, yada, yada. Kevin Durant, eighth. He's been very good, and he's Kevin freaking Durant. I cannot believe the vote total is not higher for Kevin Durant. Alperen Şengün at 11, behind Austin Reeves. Hey, man, where's the Şengün love? How are both of these guys not in the top 10? How would I have KD in the top five? Like, if we're just talking about the vote fair. Now, would I have KD as like a top five? He's an all-star starter. We did our exercise. KD was not that for me. But like, I'm kind of surprised that the Rocket stars didn't get more love than they did. So that's one. I really want to talk to Toronto for a little bit.
Oh, my.
Because on one hand, Brandon Ingram, 12th in the East in voting. They have clearly embraced him. And what he's brought to Toronto, his scoring has been very important to this Raptors group that is now starting to perk right back up after the little bit of the lull. So I want to salute you there. Scottie Barnes is not in the top 20 on this list. A Raptor is there, and it is not Scottie Barnes.
It's Brandon Ingram.
One, first and foremost, and you know, based on my team, we had this all-star conversation. One, Scottie Barnes is just an all-star. He has been that good. He's been that impactful on both ends of the floor. He should just be there merit-based, right? But I would like to zoom out. I think Raptor fans have very understandable and valid gripes with the way that their team is covered outside of their own market and the level of attention that they do or do not receive when they are playing well. This is years-long complaints, and they are incredibly valid. It's a to the Kyle Lowry era, et cetera. That is very much valid. What do you mean, Scottie Barnes, as of the time that we record, one of seven players averaging 19, 8, and 5, and once you add in a steal on the block, I think it's him and Alperen Şengün, who again needs more votes, but whatever. One of two players averaging 19, 8, 5, 1, and 1 this year. There have been so many tweets and campaigns about Scottie Barnes all defense, and I agree he should be on an all defense team as of today. When you think in this years-long context of we do not get enough love, how is your all-star rep not the guy that you've been hammering for? How is your all-star rep the new guy?
Because he's cooking. Let him cook.
So is Scottie Barnes. He is fresh off of 23, 25, and 10.
Well, technically, that was two games ago.
It's still relatively fresh. Put it in the refrigerator. But, like, what do you mean, Scottie Barnes? How do you not have Brandon Ingram and Scottie Barnes on the list? Like, again, personally, I think Scottie should be above Brandon Ingram in this. Like, we have to split. I'm the Scottie guy. You're the Brandon Ingram guy. That's fine. But, like, at bare minimum, put both of them in.
He was 19th.
Franz Wagner ain't played in weeks.
He was 19th last year, guys.
And that was a shame, too. What are we doing right now?
Respecting the season that Brandon Ingram's had. What do you mean?
It's not mutually exclusive. At the very least, it shouldn't be. Can't hit me with the nobody respects Scottie Barnes, and Scottie Barnes can't get more votes than Joel Embiid, who's played eight games on one leg. That can't be the bit.
Bucket getting. Respect bucket getting. Respect bucket getting.
Vote.
Respect Paolo Banchero. And the Knicks.
Anthony, you let Josh Hart get more votes than Scottie Barnes.
We respect the effort.
Mm-mm. That fan base is too big. Mm-mm. I love y'all, but like, no.
Well, Scottie on the list. Well, Brandon Ingram's 12th, you know?
He sure is. And Scottie's been better than him, in my opinion. Either way, it doesn't have to be one or the other. It could be both. Scottie Barnes got fewer votes than Norm Powell. Also deserves all-star consideration, to be clear. Also intrigued by Norm being the Heat rep on this list and not Bam by the bio, but that circles back to your overall big man point. But like, hey, man, Scottie's been too good this year, and y'all have been clamoring, clamoring way too long for Scottie Barnes for me to look at this top 20 and see some of the names that I'm seeing on here. LaMelo's played 14 minutes this year. Why is he on this list above Scottie Barnes?
Because they respect the passing.
Respect Scottie's.
Nikias, what is the ballot that you cast to make Scottie Barnes an all-star starter?
I would imagine the one that also has MPJ, who's 10th.
No, I'm just
Pascal. Who's not? You, any of these names you're gonna place with Scotty Barnes? I'm not going.
Here's the thing. Easy there, Tiger. Use your brain. If Giannis is on someone's ballot this many times and all these guards appear, can you see where Scotty maybe doesn't get five for some people?
For some people, absolutely, Steve. And this is where I get on this podcast and I complain, what do you mean Scotty Barnes is 16th? He should be higher. Not Scotty Barnes is not on the list altogether. You got former Raptors on the list. Pascal's on the list. OG Anunoby's on the list, who's having himself one heck of a season. You got former Raptors on the list. You got the new Raptor on the list. Scotty Barnes is putting together the all-defense season. And not top 20?
But, I mean, Jalen Johnson is 8. You know what I mean?
Salute. Salute. I'm not going. I agree that more people outside of Canada need to respect what Scotty Barnes is doing, but I also need Canada to show up in this case. I'm so sorry. Yell at me if you need to. Wouldn't be the first time, won't be the last time. I say it out of love. This is unacceptable.
This is the second time that you've taken out Canada over All-Star voting. Incredible content.
And I need them to receive it and do better. Salute to Brandon Ingram. Scotty Barnes deserves more of your love. Steve, anything else pop for you?
Oh, no, not after that.
Okay.
My job is done here.
My job is done. Fair enough. Unbelievable. Steve, do you have free throws?
Do you have free throws, sir?
I do.
What you got?
Do you have a take on the James Nagy situation?
No.
Okay. I found a level of intrigue with a former draftee is now going to Baylor, but like has not played an NBA minute. But that, it seems to be opening up the floodgates in a lot of conversations. So I want to see if you had your thoughts on that.
Not for me.
Okay, fair enough. LeBron is literally getting older today. Happy birthday once again. Do you have a LeBron highlight or game or moment that stands out to you in particular?
One specific LeBron highlight or moment?
Yeah.
For me, I still think of the dunk on Jason Terry.
Yeah, that was a good one. That was.
And then I still think of the whispering at the free throw line.
That's also a good shot. The Jason Terry one, still, it should not bother me this much time after. The fact that he got teed up for that, he just looked at him and walked off. And it's like, nah, unsportsmanlike. Like, what do you mean? I can't even push the, like, let them emote button. He didn't emote. That was the whole point.
Mm.
What do you mean he's getting teed up for that? Yeah, that one got me. Like, the block is the easy one. Him and Dwayne Wade just... One, they probably should have lost the Pacers series. I'm thinking of, I think, the 14 series. But like him and Dwayne Wade just kind of closing the door towards the end of that series is always a fun one. You have the Wade to LeBron lob. a lot of different LeBron moments for me. But those are some that stick out. But, Steve, going back to the free throws. As of recording, the Phoenix Suns are only a game and a half behind the Minnesota Timberwolves for sixth. Does Jordan Knott just get coach of the year if they finish top six this year?
No.
Ooh, okay.
I think it will be in consideration, but I think it's too many good coaching jobs with scenarios where they could overachieve or overperform for me to hand it to Jordan. Not that Jordan Knott's not deserving, but I mean, if Detroit runs away with the number one seed, what are we talking about?
Okay.
If the Thunder somehow make history, what are we talking about?
Understood. And for you specifically, how much have you enjoyed the Oso Iguodaro experience as of late?
Fantastic. I like his versatility. I like his usage. I like the way he gets after it on both ends.
Yeah, the short role playmaking is popping right now. Colin Gillespie also playing incredibly well. But okay, has the John Morant return moved you at all?
It's been fine.
Okay, fair enough. 17-10 against the Bucks. A lot of flair in that game, but played well. Do you have more belief in Portland or Utah right now?
Portland.
Okay, fair enough. I had to send my notes. Are the Pacers okay?
No.
It 9 straight losses, and like, it's one thing to lose. It's another thing to lose the way that they are currently losing. And some of these defensive breakdowns, like the great Caitlin Cooper posted the clip, where it's like half the team's in man, half the team's in zone. It's just an open shot early in the clock. It's just like,
what is this? For who? Exactly. The one person you can't leave open.
It's making me sad. Okay. To the Lakers, quickly, Steve. So we had the Christmas Day loss to the Houston Rockets. JJ had some thoughts and some comments after that game. We're going to have this uncomfortable meeting. We're going to get this right, et cetera, et cetera. Beat the brakes off the Sacramento Kings, but notably, defensively. And I think you hinted at this as well with your threat. It was the fifth lowest switch rate of the year for them defensively. Do you think they're going to be more of a drop slash navigate team moving forward? Or do you think that was more matchup specific?
I think it'll be the best of both worlds. I think I'll save the Lakers for next episode, but they are who they are defensively, and they just have to be better at the things they can do.
Okay, fair enough. I know you want to save your Philly thoughts as well, so I will save my Joel Embiid question.
No, ask me the Joel Embiid question. Give it to me. Come on, right down the pipeline. Let's go, buddy.
I was just going to ask, like, where are you at with the Embiid integration?
That's fine. I mean, for me, he's in the Jamal Murray zone where he was when he coming back from injury. I'm just looking at the nights where he wants to drive and when he's able to jump and protect the rim. And okay, let's lock in on those nights. What's that look like? He's trying to get to the season, see how he can respond. So I'm okay with it. They've built enough around it to make it make sense.
Okay. Back to the Lakers. Austin Reeves notably out again with the calf issue. The Lakers next five. They have the Detroit Pistons later on tonight. They have the Memphis Grizzlies twice on Friday and on Sunday. They go to New Orleans. They go to San Antonio. How worried are you about the Los Angeles Lakers during this stretch?
It's either 2-3 or 3-2.
Okay. Fair enough. Last couple for me. The Wolves have recently been linked to Coby White and Colin Sexton over the past couple of weeks. Would you actually like to see the Wolves make a move for a guard? Are you okay with young guys figuring it out and we still have Mike Conley when we need him?
Respect Mike Conley. Next.
Okay. And this is why I prepared the second one. If not Minnesota, are there any landing spots that speak to you in regards to Coby White or Colin Sexton?
Dallas.
That would be interesting. Okay, those are all the free throws I have. And if you do not have any, Steve, I would like to quickly say thank you to those who listen to and or watch this episode of the Dunker Spot podcast. Please subscribe if you haven't already. The new Yahoo NBA channel is live, so please subscribe. But we are on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can follow me on socials at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on socials at SteveJones20. Happy New Year. Hope it's a prosperous one for you. And we will catch you later in the week.